following is a remastered version of the Pulse Gamecast, a production of Holosuite Media. Tune in to our live show every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural show of the Pulse Gamecast at holosuitemedia.com. I am your host, Graydahl. Joining me is my co-host, Jason.
Hello.
And we are a podcast dedicated to reporting on weekly news concerning game releases for PC, console, and tabletop gaming. I thought, since this is the inaugural show, Jason and I will introduce ourselves. We'll kind of establish our nerdy street cred, as it were, just let you know what we're playing, what we're looking forward to playing, and kind of set ourselves up like that. So I'll go ahead and start. For me, my very first console I ever owned was actually Mattel's Intellivision. That was probably around, I think that was 80, 81, something like that. I actually had that for a very long time and didn't get an NES until probably, I think, around my sophomore year in high school, which would have been like 90. So, late bloomer. After that, yes. I moved on. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was laughing. That says NES. I couldn't remember when I hit that thing. I think it was 89, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. My cousin got it when it came out in America, of course, and it was just crazy. young little Graydahl was just blown away. Let's see here. After the NES, I probably went on to Sega Genesis, then the Super Nintendo, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, so on and so forth. What about you, Jason? What was your first console?
Oh, wow. Yeah. The honestly, my first console was the Atari 2600, sad to say. Me and my father was a fireman, and so he'd come home and he'd be like, "What is this?" And I'd have to teach him how to play Pitfall. Or back then, I know a lot of people don't remember that arcades were the rage. We'd go put quarters in machines all day long, but you'd come home trying to duplicate that with your parents with the old Pac-Man and track and field. And, oh, track and field. My fingers used to hurt from smacking that stick.
Right.
But, so, yeah, you know, you haven't played a game until you've done over some crocodiles.
But, right.
I did have an Intellivision, the gold and brown, as my second. I enjoyed it much more because Tron was huge back then, and that really made nerds legit.
Indeed.
So, discs of Tron, deadly discs
yeah.
of Tron.
Right.
Do yourself a recognizer. You're the man.
Ah, right, yeah.
And I was the first guy on my block to reach a million. And actually, that was a big thing because back then, obviously, no internet. So no one knew it happened at a million. And that was whenever you first found out that there was a new enemy. They would come out, the white guys with the orange sticks, to stun you. So my dad was like amazed. I remember my father walking in looking, saying, "Oh my God, you're about to hit a million." Because he had seen me play it for so many weeks. But yeah, that was huge. And then a lot of people also don't remember the Intellivision was the first thing to have the speech synthesizer.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Modular. Yeah. And then it actually had a keyboard that you could plug in, and so those were pretty cool little additions to a console way back in the day. So a lot of people may or may not remember that. But yeah, those were my first ones as well. I miss that stuff.
Of course, we can't talk about gaming without talking about PC gaming as well. My first PC I ever owned was the TRS-80 Color Computer 2. The only game I had for that was Zaxxon, and that was on a cassette drive, an external cassette drive. You know, that computer was, it only had BASIC on it, and I'm not a PC guy, so I guess that's the right phrasing, Jason.
It
just had BASIC.
It.
Yeah, so, and it came with this encyclopedia-sized booklet of little things you could program. I don't want to say little. Of little programs you could program in yourself in BASIC to make weird noises or flashing screens. And that's about all that thing was good for. What about you, Jason? What was your first PC?
Oh, that was yeah, that was been the Commodore VIC 20. I mean, me and my grandfather bought out of Popular Magazine a Timex Sinclair ZX88 with the you actually soldered it together. He purchased it for $100. You soldered it together and it had an RG, or it had the old 500 ohm connection to hook up via coax to a television set with the that was amazing. And then I got a VIC 20, Commodore VIC 20, which was right around the Atari era, and with the maximum of 1200 baud modem.
Screaming.
Oh yeah, I was smoking it. And that was back in the bulletin board days before the internet was widely known that it even existed. So I was calling Birmingham from Mississippi, a long distance line. My mom found out for 45 minutes at a time to download these games. I was in so much trouble. But yeah, those were the days.
Yeah.
Oh, did you remember, like I said, I don't know if you had a cassette drive. Where I lived, they used to actually transmit that on Sundays. You could actually set a record on your cassette at home, your audio cassette, record it. They would transmit the program and you could stop and reload it into a computer. It was it was something else. Wow. It was a Sunday afternoon, something to do with the radio.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so how about right now? What are you? What are your big games that you're playing?
Right now, I'm kind of neck deep. I went ahead because Black Flag had released Assassin's Creed 4 had released for the PS3. I went back and I was replaying Assassin's Creed 3 because I love the storyline. And let's see, other than that. Black Ops 2 multiplayer because I'm too poor to afford the new Ghost that's coming out. So, but that's it. And then on PC, I've been playing a lot of SWTOR and been playing a little bit of Secret World. So,
yep, very cool. I'm not doing too much console-wise at the moment. Probably my most recent console gaming was a second playthrough of Bioshock Infinite, and currently on the PC, like you, I'm playing SWTOR. I'm also neck deep into Batman Arkham Origins at the moment, and that's probably what I will be doing after we finish recording. Jumping back in and busting some heads. Like I said, one of the primary purposes of the show, of the podcast, is to inform you, the gamer, of some of the goings on in the gaming community. And Jason and I have been scanning the internet and whatnot, and we found a couple really cool things that we liked on Kickstarter. I'd like to talk about the first one, and that's called City of Titans. That's the Phoenix Project. If you were ever a City of Heroes / Villains player, then you know the awesomeness that is a well-done superhero MMO. And you also know that, for reasons unknown, the company will just shut you off at the drop of a hat and say, hey, play this other superhero MMO that's nowhere near as good, i.e. Champions Online. So have got together. They've started writing code. They are remaking different names, of course, but they are remaking City of Heroes / Villains, and that's what this Kickstarter is about. Jason, I think you were definitely a bigger COX player than I was.
I loved it. Honestly, I just missed the beta. A friend of mine was playing beta, but I just missed the beta. And then when they went City of Villains to expand on what was already a really good, well-done game, I couldn't keep away. I think I was running a couple of accounts at one point. And truthfully speaking, I loved it because I was a father. I am a father of multiple kids here. And it's one of the few games where it plays like a comic book, like the old comic books, not the darker ones that we read nowadays. But you didn't kill people. You knocked them out and took them to jail. There was no real gore and violence like there tends to be nowadays in a lot of what people would consider typically nonviolent genres. And superheroes was something me and my son could play. And he was only, I think, 7 or 6 when it was still around. And it had gone free to play by the time he was 8. But it was a wonderfully done MMO, lots of power sets. You could create what was really amazing above anything else, and I still think that they have not gotten it in any other game yet, none of them, was that it had an incredibly diverse character creator. If you could think it, you could make it.
I mean, even up until the end, I could easily plan on 15, 20 minutes just to roll a character, just to create the look of the character, much less the power sets.
And that was just truly amazing. So, yeah. I mean, if you wanted to have, you know, a bat-winged, fiery-eyed person who was exposed to radiation and could still cast, some type of radioactive goop, that could happen in that game. And they left you plenty of area to go about your backstory and stuff. And that's what's so good about this Kickstarter is someone, a group got together who loved it, who cherished it. Obviously, they wanted this community input, and they said, look, you did this right, but it went away. We need to fix that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just watching the little video, you can tell that these guys, of course, know what they're doing code-wise, but they're obviously fans. They played the game, City of Whatever, and they want to recreate that experience. And you can tell in the quality of just the promo video, just to get you to kickstart the thing, they obviously are pouring heart and soul into it. Now, the Kickstarter is officially over on Kickstarter, but I believe you can still go to their site, which is cityoftitans.com, and I believe you can still do stretch funding there.
That's amazing, some of the options that you have. You put your name, statues, nameplates, exploration badges.
Right.
I was like, what? You can have your own exploration badge for a completionist like me? That's Nirvana.
Yeah. In keeping with the Kickstarter theme, another one that we've come across is Star Citizen. You want to tell us about that one, Jason?
Star Citizen, outstanding Kickstarter. I'm so glad. For those people who are not familiar with some of the amazing things that Robert Space Industries is capable of, the gentleman who brought you such incredible titles as Privateer, Wing Commander, 1 through whatever, and pretty much all of the incredible space sims shy of Star Wars or Star Trek. If it was a space sim, I'm fairly certain Chris had his hands in it somewhere. We're talking about the man, the myth, the legend who inspired people to create things such as Babylon 5. I did some digging and found out that the Straczynski was inspired by Wing Commander. So,
oh, I did not know
that's,
that.
That's
very
some
cool.
Amazing stuff. And so this man said, look, we need an Eve sandbox that is community driven. That obviously he's going to want his hands all over it, but we're talking about the man, one of the godfathers of space sims. And so he gets up a Kickstarter, and most of the time we're used to seeing, I mean, what would you say an average Kickstarter price is on a lot of the Kickstarter stuff we see?
I mean, for stuff like video games, I think they're asking for like $100,000, something like that.
And what was his? And he nailed it.
Oh, I think it ended at like 600 plus.
600,000 plus. You're like, what? And
yeah,
he nailed it.
And I think the stretch goals on the site have even gone, I want to say, maybe almost 2 million. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Exactly. And that's what's so amazing is that everyone, it's like George Lucas basically walking up to you and say, hey, I got this idea for a movie. What do you think? Gosh, George. I was looking, just a quick look over the site shows that you can still dig into it by going to robertspaceindustries.com, where he's hosting the front end of it, not the Kickstarter portion, but the actual front end of the game. And he's digging up packages already, from all the way up to Rear Admiral, which is a $275 package. And it's amazing because we're talking about at launch, you're going to have a multi-person spacecraft that you can crew with an AI gunner or invite your friends along.
Oh.
I don't know about you, but multi-person spacecraft happens to be a draw for me. I think that may be something for you too that you talked about.
Yeah, for different reasons though. Mine was for SWTOR, but just with what you can do in Star Citizen, with what they're promising, I've told people about it, and I kind of describe it as almost first-person Eve. And yeah, definitely, if you can bring your buddies along to gun your starship, or crew your starship for you, that's incredible.
just on his site. And that's what I'm saying. If you love something like Eve, and that's, I was hoping by just dropping that name and saying Chris, then everyone would go, whoa. But we're talking about, he not only did he make his schedule, but he's pulled some pretty heavy names down, and he's already promising that you have a place in the game where you can like go into the docking bay, walk around your ship, invite your friends and show them around. That's already happened. If that's already happened, it's not going to be too much longer. And having your name on something like this and being a first subscriber, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, the currently the hangar module is active for, I guess, Kickstarter's subscribers. You can walk on the hangar. You walk into your hangar, you can see the ships that you've bought. I think that's about all you can do at the moment, but you know, technically it's pre-alpha even. So, hey, that's, I mean, already it's a tangible reward for your Kickstarter. You get to walk in, you know, virtually of course. You get to walk in and see what you're paying for. So that's pretty cool.
It is. And starting at $30, you can get in at Digital Scout, go to Digital Bounty Hunter for $65, and then all the way up to Rear Admiral for $275. But that's some outstanding stuff. I highly suggest that people, if they're interested in Eve, or if you were interested in the old Privateer series, because this is the natural extension of what that game really was, its spiritual successor per se.
Moving on to another game, SWTOR, Star Wars The Old Republic. Yeah, Jason and I both play this. The big gorilla in the room, as it were, is Galactic Starfighter. Off the rails, 12 versus 12, Starship PvP. For subscribers, this drops on December 3rd, January 14th for preferred. That means if you've spent $5 and bought cartel coins, you are a preferred player. And February 4th for the free-to-play players. This digital expansion is free. Now, unlike the Hutt Cartel, you do not have to buy it. If you just show up in-game on those dates, you will get it. Now, Jason and I are subscribers, and if you were a subscriber before November 1st, you get access to special paint jobs for your ships, as well as, I'm assuming, adaptive gear, which look like flight suits, you know, Republic and Empire. So that's really cool. I know Jason and I both are looking forward to it. I believe Jason even came back to the game just because of that.
Oh, you got me in so much trouble. I had Galaxies, I had 30 accounts at one point, and two of the accounts were strictly for flying. One was a crafter, and he'd craft the ships for the other two to go shoot people in deep space. So, multiplayer,
cool.
Though, right? You multiplayer again?
PvP, yes, PvP. Now, as of right now, it's only PvP. You know, Jason and I have talked about this. And, of course, I hope BioWare and EA just follow the natural progression of space-based off-the-rails PvE. Guild ships, you know, guild cruisers would be great. Space-based raids. You know, you and your guildmates or whatever have to jump into your special starfighters and go take down a big enemy cruiser, something like that. The possibilities are endless, and quite frankly, you know, when you think of Star Wars, that's what you think of, epic space battles, you know, trench runs on the Death Star. I mean, come on now, that's what we're all hoping for.
It's what's coming. I mean, truthfully speaking, this is the perfect way for them to beta test, and I'm not saying beta test, but you know what I mean, to load test servers for this PvP event, to see how many people can be in an instance before it starts lagging or having an issue. And that's really, I think, where they're going with it, because we were already promised half a year ago. I listened to another one of our sister podcasts, Utini Cast, which is a really good SWTOR podcast for anybody who hasn't listened to it. They said outright that they were told that we were going to get guild space stations. Well, guild space stations lead to guild raids, and that's just what I see happening. So it's, you heard it here, and you can bank on it, folks. I'm betting within the next year, before we have our year, I'm betting there's going to be some PvE action.
That, I mean, just stands to reason. So of course your guild hops in their huge cruiser and goes to another guild's space station, and just, you go to town. That's awesome. I can't wait. I hope that pans out.
Sweet.
Yeah. Let's see, a couple minor little SWTOR news droplets. As of yesterday, you can buy cartel coins in-game now. No alt-tabbing out or doing it out of game. Just go to the cartel market and you can purchase coins in there. Yay. Also, beginning November 12th, if you have ever played SWTOR and have not been a subscriber for a long time, they are recycling names on characters levels 1 through 10. Watch your servers, because after November 12th, hey, you never know, something very cool may become available name-wise. If you haven't logged on, I believe it's within a year, they will take your name, and that is on free-to-play and preferred accounts. If you're a subscriber, your names are safe.
Nice.
This week, so Jason and I have come across this website that we've kind of fallen in love with. It's called VGCharts.com. And what this website does is it shows you global sales of the week and global pre-orders of console-based video games. I believe there's a PC section. I honestly haven't looked. One of the things that we kind of laughed about and wasn't really a surprise is Pokemon X and Y in Japan topped their weekly sales by triple, I think it was, Jay?
Triple.
Yeah, it was like 230,000 some units sold in Japan, whereas the next game below that sold like 80-something thousand, so we're not really shocked by that. But it's a cool site, and we've both been keeping tabs on it because of... We're just watching the Call of Duty numbers roll in. They show the weeks to launch. They show the weekly change, like how many pre-orders have come in over the past week. Do you have enough info on this, Jay, or do you want to hold off till next week when we get a few more numbers on
Ghosts? Well, what we've got here, honestly, is we've got some retail numbers, and okay, you can compare them, but it's like comparing oranges to tangelos. we're real close, but it's not the same thing. Basically, okay, what they're saying is, and this is what I'm getting from as of 4 hours old news and a somewhat reliable source being NBC. They're saying that $1 billion worth of copies were sold to retailers on the first day.
Now, did you say $1 billion with
a B? $1 billion with a B.
Wow.
So that's fairly significant numbers. Because it took GTA, if I'm not mistaken, GTA 5 was the 800-pound gorilla on this one. Grand Theft Auto did its $1 billion in the first 3 days.
Yeah.
But now, again, they said that they had sold more than 1 billion copies in its first 3 days on the market, not to just retailers.
Oh, well.
So, again, oranges to tangelos, however... That being said, I believe Colin Sebastian was one who said, they said, don't make any direct comparisons between the data that we've got with Ghosts and Grand Theft Auto 5 because it's apples and oranges for the time being. So what they want is a couple of more days to see how many credit cards are actually going through, because we've got some big numbers on pre-orders. That same site that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm, what we were looking at, if I'm not mistaken, as of... as of 1 week out, it says 957,000 copies total.
Pre-ordered,
exactly.
Wow.
And that's just on the Xbox.
On the Xbox, so that's probably $60 a copy. It's been a long day, and I can't do the math. So
not hard to do
the math. 957. Yeah.
So you're basically talking about 60 million easily.
Yeah.
So that's not bad at all. And mm-hmm, then you add in the 500,000 for PS3, that ends up being another 330 million. So that's 90 million right there, just in pre-order copies. And that's right, just a rough estimate. So
long story short, Call of Duty Ghost players, you will not have trouble making your multiplayer games
1 week until Xbox One and PS4 drops their numbers. So we'll see how that rolls.
Alrighty, let's see here. A couple other little gaming tidbits. BioShock Infinite's I consider it their first DLC. Burial at Sea, Episode 1, drops November 12th. That is BioShock Infinite's Return to the City of Rapture. And when I watched this video for the first time, my jaw just dropped because I am, as you will discover as you listen to this show, I am a BioShock fanatic. I love me some BioShock. Also, November 22nd, this is another one I'm really excited about. For the Nintendo 3DS, they're releasing The Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds. And for those of you that had a Super Nintendo and ever played Legend of Zelda:
A Link to the Past.
Wow, there we go. That like I said, a long day.
We'll have to take 20 rupees away from you for that.
That's right, I know exactly. they are remaking the game, calling it A Link Between Worlds. If you've ever played the game, you know exactly what that means. I believe they're adding some content, so it's not going to be a total rehash of the game, but it will be 3D for the 3DS. This was a game that, oh man, I just lost so much of my life on back in 1994. Running from bees and chickens.
The chickens. That's awesome sauce right there. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this legend. So basically, what we're talking about here is, and this you're going to forgive my ignorance on this particular one because I don't have a 3DS. Basically, what we're talking about is a remake of Link to the Past, but with newer content. I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's some newer content, improved graphics, and like I said, it'll also be 3D if you care about that.
That is pretty daggum awesome. Yeah. I wish they'd have done that with the series they did with Final Fantasy. What was it, Chronicles?
Yep.
I wish they would have added just a little bit more. The graphics were updated, but it needed just a little bit touch more.
And you know, speaking of just, have you gone back and replayed like Final Fantasy VII?
Not VII. I actually, when they released on PSN, they released a whole bunch of the older Final Fantasies. I bought a few of those, and I even on the Android bought the original Final Fantasy for my Nexus 7.
Oh.
So, but not 8. I really want to. In fact, I think I've still got the cheat guide sitting around here somewhere.
Yeah, actually, I've got the Final Fantasy VII Brady strategy guide sitting right here beside me. But, I tried to go back and play it. Man, you know, I'm jaded, I guess. I'm just, it's a good story. It's a great story. And it is, you know, I mean, it is iconic Final Fantasy. But, oh, man, the controls, the interface is so clunky.
Clunky, yep.
It is clunky.
You feel like the guy with his, I always forget his name, the dude who has one hand in a sling and the other in his sword. I can't remember his name. The guy wears the red coat, the long coat, the spiky haircut.
Yeah.
You know, I always wondered, how does he ever do any super moves with one arm out and one arm in?
Moving on, Jason has a little bit of news about the PlayStation 4 and their PlayStation Plus subscription plan.
That has been a talk of the town with a lot of the people. One of the things we used to hold over the Xbox people as PlayStationers is that we didn't have to pay for our multiplayer. We taunted and pointed and laughed and jeered, and guess what? Chickens have come home to the roost. They have improved their infrastructure, and in doing so, all things we used to whine and moan and throw fits about have now been fixed, supposedly. Now, not having a PS4 yet, I couldn't tell you anything, and since my translation's bad, I don't know anyone in Japan. But from what I've been told, we will now have good game matching. When I say good, as good or better than Xbox's game matching, less lag and spiking. And a lot better infrastructure about getting on. The load times, the download times are going to be just shortened immeasurably. Now what we're talking about here is the multiplayer subscription plan. It will be part of the standard PS4, the standard PlayStation Network subscription, which at, you know, like $50 is generally what we're talking about here, comes to less than $4 a month. Well, $4.99 a month is generally what we're talking about. But you can purchase it in bulk and get it a cheaper price. But what you'll be getting is digital game sharing, which is something that not very many people have talked about. If you like a game, you'll be able to share it with someone for a limited time. They'll be able to play it. If they like it, they can purchase it. So word of mouth is always a wonderful thing, especially since they know they target one person, they get all their friends. 2 gigabyte cloud storage up from 1 gig, which is pretty dadgum good. And free content that we're all so happy about. And I believe, I think you've had a subscription too. I've had some really good experiences where I was downloading games, full price games. Saints Row 3, I think, is one of the ones that I got. Little Big Planet Karting. Quite a few games. But my point being, I said, have you done this too? These are things you can keep after your subscription is up if you don't want to do that, right?
Yeah, now that's one thing I like about with the PS4. With the PS3, yeah, you got all this great free stuff, but as soon as you stopped subscribing to the Plus, you lost it. You didn't get access to it. And definitely if they're offering free stuff that you get to keep, hey. And you know, I'm sure that'll include some increased, it has to include some increased security. We don't want the, 3 hackings of Sony to happen again, so... So
I mean,
if it comes down, you know, $5 a month, whatever, I'll pay it for multiplayer. That's fine.
Same here. And in the end, like I said, it's gonna end up being a better deal for everyone involved, paying for the infrastructure. Because again, one last addendum to that, really, what we're talking about here is that we're playing for the multiplayer massive games that are the big titles we've come to see: Battlefield 4, Ghosts, Assassin's Creed, the non Sony online pre-made games. Because from what I'm hearing, and again, don't quote me on this, but I'm fairly certain that I've got really good sources on this, because I've only heard it twice, but on both sources, one being GameSpot, I think, is that things like DC Online Universe, games that you purchase or have massive multiplayers that are hosted on Sony servers, are not going to be subject to that massive thing. But I'll have more as that time rolls on. So there you go.
Very cool. Moving on to our third section of what we're unofficially calling general geeky stuff. We wanted to give you guys some information on some upcoming or interesting things we found about tabletop gaming, primarily RPGs. Jason and I are both gamers. If we see something really cool, board game-ish or whatever, we'll throw that in as well. But Jason found something there again on Kickstarter, kids. That's where it's at. Showed me the other night, and it was awesome. Jason, you want to tell us about the tabletop?
Tabletop Connect is an excellent, excellent, wonderful thing. Basically, if you're in different cities, or even if you're in the same city, but you can't just swing it to all get together at the same location at the same time to play some old-fashioned roll-the-dice, pen-and-paper tabletop gaming. And I hope I'm not establishing too far my street cred back.
Huh.
This is what you'll want to do. We're talking your typical Dungeons and Dragons, D20, possibly, you know, Cthulhu, could be Champions, whatever it is that you like playing. But, you know, let's just say Dungeons and Dragons to bring everybody onto the same thing. What we're talking about here is someone went back and completely rethought this out. They said, hey, let's make it digital to where anyone would want to use it, make them feel at home. That way, if they're using their webcams and talking to each other, this is something simple. So what we ended up with is these people have gotten together at they only pledged $22,500 as their goal, but they've already hit $34,000 with 530 backers. So they hit their goal, and now they're steadily rolling and adding people on, which is amazing. They have a 2D system where you can import like a PNG drawing of your favorite dungeon, but their tool set will allow you to scan or to immediately start creating a three-dimensional dungeon on top of your drawing from the scanning that you made. It'll allow you to import three-dimensional characters that they have, icons and tokens, and you'll be able to use actual, you know, point of vision from your character to a location with a map that you just recently drew that morning, set up incredibly quickly. And it's completely game agnostic. So if you want to play the old D20, or if you want to play, say, something like Pathfinder or Savage Worlds, you'll be able to use whatever version you want, because it has its own dice roller. It has its own cue cards, and you'll be able to import your own players edition handbooks and stuff like that and distribute them amongst your players. We're talking about a full-fledged game system here that most people, if you're talking about the larger 800-pound gorillas like Battlegrounds and Fantasy Grounds, you'd pay hundreds of dollars for these licenses. These guys right here, they're knocking it down where you'll be able to have a viewer mode, which is even better if someone can come in and just watch to see whether they like your game. This is some incredible stuff. What do you feel about it?
Yeah, just watching the video, I was totally just taken aback by it. Like you said, the live drawing. So as you're playing the game, you can, to simulate Fog of War, you can have your players walk into a room and then draw out only a few little sections of tunnel. Well, that's as far as you can see. You have to move down the tunnel and actually, you know, point, click, drag, whatever, and make the dungeon as they explore it. It even has a tool that you input the light source that the party is carrying, a torch, a sun rod, a light spell, and it will actually light the playing field to simulate that source. If it's only a little torch with like a 10 or 15 foot radius, that's all they get to see. It actually darkens the rest of the room. It is incredible. Incredible.
And comes with webcam and voice chat out of the box. Works with a Mac or a PC. Has spots for one person to play multiple characters in case somebody drops out. That's amazing. You know, you can say, hey, take control of my character, I gotta go. You know how often that happens whenever you're playing pen and paper.
Sure.
With older, especially with once you get a little bit older like us, if kids drop in or something like that. But they got dice macros. You can actually save your session right where you left off and pick it up later. It's just, I'm really impressed with how far these people have come. I did not see this on the horizon, and I was actually shown it by a friend of mine. So I'm just really impressed and happy to share it with other people.
Yeah, it's a really neat product. Obviously, for maybe some of you guys who live in more remote areas where your fellow gamers are few and far between, then this is the perfect thing for you. Check it out on Kickstarter. Let's see. Also, just on a side note of gaming today from Amazon, I got a module that I've been wanting to check out, and it's called Murder in Baldur's Gate. It's obviously D&D, and those of you who are familiar with some of BioWare's older games, Baldur's Gate, that's what it is. It takes place in that city. Now, what's neat about it is when you look at it, it doesn't say on the front or the back what edition this module is for. And it's real thin, too. It's about the size of a magazine. So you pull the little cover off. It's surrounded by a GM screen. You open the GM screen, and two thin little pamphlet kind of magazine things fall out. Well, what this is the campaign guide and kind of the general happenings of the story. Now, you're flipping through it, there are no stats. There's nothing in there about, you know, races, characters, things like that. What you can do, and if D&D, if WotC starts doing this, hey, I might be on board for 5.0. What you do is you go online to their website, create a free account. Then you go to the site, which is this storyline is called the Sundering. You download a PDF that has all the pertinent stats, character, monster, stats, everything. What they do is they include the stats for all three current versions of D&D, 3.5, 4th edition, and next. So you can very easily, you can very easily convert this to whatever edition of D&D you're playing. Now, of course, it doesn't have second edition, but it shouldn't be too hard to convert to that either. Like I said, if this is their current projected model for D&D, I might be back on board because 4th edition, I'm sorry guys if you're a fan of it, no thank you.
Amen.
No thank you.
Amen.
No way. So like I said, it does have 4th edition, it does have 3.5, and it does have next. I really hope that this is what they stick with. I'm impressed with it. I like it. It looks good. Just a recommendation. One other piece of WotC news, Jason has that, and that's about some neat little stuff in 5.0.
Actually, I was upset that you left the name off. I didn't realize who was in Murder in Baldur's Gate. Did you see whose name was tattooed to that?
Well, yeah, and there again, if you're a D&D fan, I mean, the first name is Ed Greenwood, of course.
Oh,
I know, they've gone back to the source, right? Right.
You totally did not say that with nearly enough reverence, sir.
Right.
Ed Greenwood set most of these people on their path, and they don't know about it if they're playing D&D.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course you have, I mean, it's Forgotten Realms, if you
yes.
don't know. The Forgotten Realms was created by Ed Greenwood. The Forgotten Realms was a home campaign. And back in the 80s, TSR at the time put out a call, hey, we're looking for a new campaign setting. Ed Greenwood shows up in Wisconsin at TSR with, I believe the story is, 12 banker boxes full of paper. And hands it to the receptionist and says, here you go, here's my submission for a new realm, for a new campaign setting. TSR, I believe, had an on-staff librarian who spent a couple weeks organizing everything, and voila, we have the Forgotten Realms. And yeah, and then of course, you know, TSR, he was around for second edition. I think after second edition, they kind of got rid of him once WotC took over and mega corped it up.
Yeah, where's the love?
I know, but you know, this is great to see Ed back on the cover, first billing, as it were, and yeah, so you know it's going to be good. If he's got his hand back in the realms, it's going to be good.
Which definitely leads us into what WotC's got in the future. Man, I'm really, really hoping. I've been playtesting this D&D Next for quite a while, and it's actually gone through some fairly massive changes from its opening. Firing shots there, and everyone was like, oh, it's going to be this and it's going to be that, and it's going to be returned to second edition, or it's going to be 2.5, or it's going to be 3. What it ended up being is its own thing, and it's really awesome. But what impressed me the most, and I'm hoping it'll impress you guys a lot too, is that there's rumblings that it is going to be OGL, which is Open Gaming License. And a lot of people may not remember the last, and it's been almost half a generation to a generation since it's been used, D20. The D20 system was Open Gaming License, and that was solely responsible for the resurgence in tabletop gaming and, you know, a lot of these third-party gaming studios being developed that have made all these wonderful games and eventually led to Pathfinder, if I'm not mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
No, you're right.
So, I mean, we're talking about entire systems that have been created around the Open Gaming License. It's basically the Linux of the gaming world. So, we create an architecture. You guys have fun with it. You have to follow these rules to resell it. And it's really simple, open gaming source license rules. So this will open the door for people who have been wanting to make their own editions and not as happy with version 4 like we were. When 5 drops, if they go OGL, be prepared to hold on, because you're going to be a poor man for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when 3rd edition went OGL, that's when we really started seeing all kinds of new publishers, Penumbra, Green Ronin Press, Necromancer Games, just exactly that. Anyone who wants to publish something in keeping with, I'm assuming they'll have like an SRD, standard reference document.
Yes.
Anyone who wants to publish with that SRD, man, go to town, do it. So with 4th edition, of course, it's locked in. Only WotC can publish it. So, you know, if they go OGL, exactly. The market is going to be flooded with, yeah, there'll be some crap out there, but for the most part, I think it's going to be good. I can't wait to see it, and I hope they really, really stick with the OGL.
Same here. You've got people like Paizo Publishing, Paizo.com. They're actually really on board with this, and just a tip of the hat to DriveThruRPG for all of their PDF support over the years, for bringing back the old stuff and for keeping up to date with the new stuff, so that I don't have to constantly have my shelves filled with 27 volumes of the same adventure. And my wife yelling at me about all the little silverfish running around in the house. So that's big, nice thing there. And honestly, just so that you know that we're not saying anything, WotC, for although it's the corporate mega that it is, coming from its Magic the Gathering history, we're not upset with them. They have tried their best in a corporate world to keep us rolling. I don't know, you know, how Gray feels about it, but I've been really happy that they've released some of the old second edition and even some of the third edition stuff for free on PDF download from their site. So thank you for that, people. We appreciate it. Just keep that OGL in mind and kick it out to us.
That's pretty much our show for our inaugural podcast. I want to thank you for joining us and checking us out. We'd like to just give a quick shout out to some of our sister podcasts here on hollowsweetmedia.com. If you are interested in the Secret World, a modern day MMO with very much Lovecraftian influence, be sure to check out The Secret World Beyond the Veil. If you're a Star Trek fan and an STO, Star Trek Online fan, our sister podcast, Tribbles in Ecstasy, you can check those guys out as well. Let's see, we also have an in-game guild for the Secret World that's Beyond the Veil. There is a guild for all three chapters, or all three factions, rather. We also have a Star Trek Online guild for the Federation and the Klingon side. That's Tribbles in Ecstasy and Targs in Ecstasy. That's a scary thought.
Targs in Ecstasy, ah!
That's scary. And actually, we have just recently started a SWTOR guild, which Jason and I kind of run. We're small, but we're getting there. We are the Knights of Hollowsweet. Be sure to check us out. We have a Twitter account. Feel free to tweet us anything, comments, questions, whatever. That Twitter handle is @PulseGamecast. That is @PulseGamecast. Or you can email us, questions, comments, whatever, at thepulsegamecast@gmail.com. thepulsegamecast@gmail.com. You can find me on the Steam network at teletech77062.
And you can find me on the Steam network at Neuroshade, NEUROSHAYD.
Thanks for listening to the inaugural podcast, and we will be playing Malukas. The Dragonborn comes to end the show. Thanks for joining us. Have a good one, everyone.
Y'all take care.
HollowSweetMedia.com, iTunes, and Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered shows and more. You can follow us on Twitter at The Pulse Gamecast. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to ThePulseGamecast@gmail.com.